All right, Steve, we haven't seen you for a while. You left us in DPE, man.
It has been a while. I miss you a lot, Charles. I moved from DPE to become something like an evangelist for Windows Azure.
Okay.
So I'm a program manager on the team, and I'm responsible for our early adopters, for kind of a lot of the customer-facing stuff, for a lot of what's going on at PDC and the demos that we're doing at PDC, and some things like that. So it's a lot of fun, and it's kind of related to what I was doing, but now, you know,
you're actually
from inside the product team, right? I get to write some code.
Excellent.
You know, it's kind of fun.
So by now, after, you know, seeing the keynotes and stuff at PDC, people are aware of what Windows Azure is.
Yeah.
And in the interview that I did with Wannevere, we talked about the sort of the, very briefly, the programmable layer that you guys are providing.
Yeah.
And what you've been working on, I know, is like done some really interesting things with your blog, for example, running in Windows Azure, on Windows Azure, shall I say.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the programming the cloud.
Yeah. Okay. So basically what we've built on, so Windows Azure as this cloud operating system, what that means is I can write code to it, just like I write code to the Windows platform, to like Win32 as an API said, or to the .NET platform. I can write code to this cloud operating system platform. And our primary goal in making this sort of a programmable thing was to let people use all the skills and the technology and the tools that they're used to. So in this first preview of Windows Azure and the first release, which is built on .NET. So it's just that you write .NET code, you can use Visual Studio, you use WCF, you use ASP.NET, it's .NET 3.5, IS7, it's sort of all the stuff that everybody's used to. Mm-hmm. And then the only difference is just where does it run and how does it run? Instead of running on a single computer, local here or sitting in a data center somewhere, it just runs across what Monterey described as this fabric of servers that we run in the cloud. Mm-hmm. So the programming model doesn't change a whole lot, at least the tactical things of how you write the code doesn't change, but the way it runs is just this sort of new scalable architecture underneath.
Okay. But there is the notion of deploying to this scalable architecture, which is, are you saying it's the same as what I'm used to as a web developer today? I mean,
it's largely the same. So the process is actually, is write locally first, fire up Visual Studio, type some code, make an ASP.NET site, something like that, hit F5, debug it locally, it's all running there. But it's actually running, even when it's running locally, it's running in this simulation, the cloud on your desktop, we've been calling it, where it's actually got all the APIs that you have in the cloud, it's got the same programming model. You can even simulate scale, you can run it in like 5 different processes as though they're independent, and we'll just do kind of load balancing across them. So you can make sure that everything works in this sort of centralized state mode. And it's got all the storage of Windows Azure also in a local development version. So you can write against tables and blobs and whatever exactly like you'd write there, and it runs locally. So that's the first step, is basically write it and test it fully locally. And then you right-click and publish in Visual Studio. It spits out these two files. One is your package file. One is configuration, which is sort of runtime config that you can change later. You go to a web portal, upload those two files, hit deploy, and you're going. So once you've got it kind of all tested, the work to get it running in the cloud is next to nothing. I mean, it's just a couple of clicks. Yeah.
So now one of the questions, of course, is like when I think for, you know, like let's look at Channel 9, for example, right? We're hosted on OrcsWeb, which is an internet, you know, hosting provider. They have a bunch of telemetry set up on their system. So when Channel 9 goes down, which sometimes it does, we are alerted. So how does that work in this, you know, Red Dog world? Oh my God, I said Red Dog. Windows Azure world.
You must be looking at my shoes.
Indeed.
I've got the we get a little shot of these are the Red Dog shoes. That was our early code name for Windows Azure, and we got these shoes made up for the whole team to just kind of give people a little thing to rally around. When you see a bunch of people walking around the Microsoft campus with these red shoes, it kind of, you take notice, right?
Right on.
So it's fun. So the question was, so in Windows Azure, what's the, we just changed the color. Now we need blue shoes. Azure's the shade of blue.
Is everyone going to get blue shoes?
I don't know what we're going to do. We should.
Cool.
So the question is, what happens when something goes wrong? You know, what's that look like? And they're basically, so there are a couple things to note, and the first one is that we automate handling a lot of things that can go wrong. So things that used to be in sort of catastrophic failures, like a server just blew up, right? You know, so we try to, we have this mental model, servers burst into flames in the data center. They just catch on fire. I don't know, so things go wrong. A hard drive fails, that's the most common sort of thing. But there are lots of things that can go wrong that make an individual server kind of die. Now, because we're in this fabric of servers, and it's actually kind of spread across all this, you don't need to notice a lot of those things. We'll tell you about it, but it's not something that you have to wake up in the middle of the night and take some action on, right? Mm-hmm. Because if a server goes down, well, great, we just bring up another one. And meanwhile, you're already on 10 servers, so who cares? For a brief period of time, one was down, another one came up. If it's just a hardware failure, that's pretty much the end of that. We'll worry about it. We'll go replace the hardware. That's sort of our problem to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. From your perspective, we just brought something else online and it worked. So we can take care of that. Some other things that we can help with and we can sort of automate are my app crashed. I don't know, I had some buggy code. I mean, not me personally, my code's always perfect the first time I write it. But I've heard that there's some people who occasionally have bugs in their code. And when you hit some bug like that, frankly, the first step to do is just restart it. Try it again, right? You know, you've built this in sort of a stateless, scalable way, right? So if I just reboot that server, that might take care of your problem. And so that's actually, so while we want to note that it happened, and I'll get to what happens, you know, we note all these things, we tell you about all these things, but we do go ahead and just on your behalf, we'll restart that particular one. If it fails a few times, we'll go, hey, maybe there's something wrong with this server. Let's put that somewhere else, you know. If everyone's failing on the same server, there's probably something wrong. Even though we didn't detect a hard drive failure or something, there must be some problem with that physical asset. Let's take it out of the rotation. We'll put something else in later once we fixed it. So we do some things like that. There's sort of corrective things that we'll automate for you. At the same time, we log absolutely everything. So like anything that happens, you can write some custom logging in your app that logs all sorts of messages when things happen. If you crash, we'll log a stack trace and the exception that was generated. If a server goes down, whatever, these are all things that sort of we can track in the system, and we meter really well. And then there's this alert system. So we actually have this, we tie in with Windows Live Alerts, which is, I'm not sure a lot of people know about it. It's actually a really cool service. And it basically provides a platform for generating these kind of alerts, like, I've got to notify this guy. How can I do it? Well, maybe I can send an email. Maybe I can ping him on Live Messenger. Maybe I can page him, send a text message to a phone or something, right? It's actually got the infrastructure to handle that. And you can just hook that in. So you can have your app running in Windows Azure just generate an alert that will then go become a text message on your phone. Nice. And we do it for you. If something crashes, we'll go ahead and restart it because priority one is let's keep uptime, let's keep availability, right? So we'll go ahead and restart, but at the same time, we'll ship you that stack trace and the error message to a text message if you want. You can go then to the portal, retrieve all of your logs, and get sort of the gory details. Oh, before that happened, we were doing this, and it seems like it was related to this request. Then you can go basically figure it out, debug it, find out what's going on, and then go back to the cycle. Go back to the desktop, test out a fix, run it, you know, make sure that it's working, step through the debugger, make sure the thing that you thought was the problem is the problem, and then go deploy a new version, and all that happens without any downtime.
Sure. Now, sometimes we've found that things that cause problems are like SQL servers running at 100% CPU, right? And I'm assuming that in this cloud, if people are using the SQL services provider, I guess is how you think about it, or service bucket, those SQL Server instances are going to be distributed in the fabric like everything else, right? But there will be shared instances amongst any number of applications. And so if one application happens to peg the CPU, right, because maybe their stored procedures are making unbelievable numbers of table lookups or whatever, how do you deal with that problem?
Well, let me generalize the problem a little bit, because SQL services, like sort of the SQL services in Azure, is sort of one case of this general question, which is if I've got some reusable service that I'm just going to deploy to Windows Azure, and it's going to say it's an email server. It sends form letters to my customers. Mm-hmm. Not spam, of course, but
sure,
real legitimate form letters, right? And let's say we've set that up. I do that. Then you come along and you want to use it, right? And and so you do. And then there's this question of, okay, what happens now as a bunch of you come and try to use my service? What if I haven't actually provisioned enough nodes? Like, what if At the moment, I'm just running on like two instances in the in the cloud, which is roughly like having two computers running this thing. And what if that's not enough, right? You could be starved for resources because these other guys are using whatever. So I'm going to separate sort of the story today of kind of what's in our CTP of Windows Azure and where we're going with it. Mm-hmm. Where we're going with it is we'd automatically note that you're just dropping requests. Things aren't making it through. I don't know, your queue's getting long. Mm-hmm. Maybe your CPU usage is really high. Maybe your memory consumption is high. Mm-hmm. Maybe just you told us that this should never take more than 500 milliseconds and it's starting to take 750 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. Something like this, some metric that tells us you're not actually being able to achieve the response that you want, right? And so we can fix this by scaling. So then we'll do it. We'll just do it automatically. You tell us the rules, and then we'll go scale up and down based on the demand that we see, right? Now today in the CTP, we don't have all that automation yet. So today in the CTP, I've got to notice, oh, Charles is hitting my email service, and he's actually not getting very good service. I've got to scale up, and I'll note that by logging some information on my own and kind of do it. So it's sort of a little bit of a, roll your own thermostat is the way we think about it. You know,
sure.
Like, oh, I see that the performance indicators of my service aren't looking that good. I'm going to just go and make the decision to scale it up. As we get further along and we sort of relax some of the restrictions of how scale happens, and we figured out, you might be wondering now, okay, how do I tell them when I want to scale up? Sometimes it's kind of complex business logic you want to apply to this problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, things are getting slow, but my bill's already high. I don't know. Maybe I don't want you to do anything more. Or maybe actually this operation, it's okay if it gets a little slow. Or I know this is just a really temporary spike because I'm doing something. And actually my batch process in the background, that's okay. I don't need you to scale up for that. Mm-hmm. So how do you set the rules that let us know how we should scale you and scale in and out? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what holds us back from sort of giving this functionality today. But it's definitely where we're headed. Sort of, we should just be able to detect that the service isn't able to respond to the demand it's seeing and just scale it dynamically.
So, I mean, one of the questions that I think a lot of developers will ask, and people, you know, out in the audience, of course, what is what's the purpose of this? Let's step back. Let's go. I mean, think outside the box. I love that poster, by the way.
It's cleverly behind me when I knew you were coming from Channel 9.
You're very smart.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, very smart. And that's PDC. Really
yeah,
good.
That's
collateral.
All PDC.
So I guess what I would ask you is, I mean, what are we trying to do here? I mean, are we trying to become the world's largest hosting provider? I mean, what's going on here? What do you want devs to get out of this? What's going on?
I think in general, I mean, one thing to think about is there's a lot of cool stuff that you can extend a lot of things today. There are a lot of platforms on the web that can kind of be made better if I write some code, mm-hmm. right? But there's this general problem of where do I put that code? How do I run it? How do I achieve scale if I need to? Right? Mm-hmm. There's sort of this big problem of you either go, oh, you know what? I can just get a couple servers and maybe I'll be fine. I'm not going to be doing a ton of traffic or something. Or you're in this bucket of, oh, I'm going to get a bunch of funding. I'm going to build out a data center. It's going to cost me a lot of money up front, but I know that I'm going to be the next big thing, whatever. There's a lot of people who don't know which of those buckets they're in, or they're sort of in one bucket and they move to the other one, right? They start out with something small, they kind of grow into something big. I think in general, this notion of sort of consumption-based business in the cloud is all about that, is about, you know what, when I need more servers, well, I'll be making money because of what I'm doing, or mm-hmm. or I'll at that point be able to invest in sort of the expense of sort of running more servers. I don't want to do that up front. I don't want to have to over-provision. I don't want to have to get twice as much as I need now because I know I might have to grow and whatever. So that's sort of the general. I mean, I think that's why the cloud. Why are people moving there and whatever? It's this. It's, you know, I need an easy way to get this stuff going, and I want to be able to just kind of grow as I go without having these pains of wow, I outgrew my one SQL server. Now I've got to go to clustering. That's actually a big thing, and now I've got to go re-engineer some things. Or I outgrew my one web server, so now I've got to go move my session state out somewhere else. Or, you know, there are all these headaches that even though it's the same technologies, just as you grow, there are these points where it's sort of there's a growth there's sort of this growth curve, and you kind of pass over this hump, and now you're in a bigger bucket, and now the rules change a little bit. We want it to just be the smooth continuum. It's just, you know, I start out over here, I grow and grow and grow and grow, and never do I re-architect my site, do I switch to a new technology, do I whatever. I just start and I keep going. And I think that's sort of the void that we wanted to fill. What we didn't see anybody else doing was really addressing the developer story of all this, and how do you just sit down, write some code, and go through this whole spectrum without ever having to be, you know, move to a new data center, and you know, get different stuff, pay a bunch of money up front, learn new tools and whatever. And so I think that's kind of where we are. Now, what kind of apps you can run in this, it's sort of open. I mean, I'm intentionally not really, you know, I don't want to pigeonhole us as oh, we run, for example, I use websites a lot in my examples. I'm like, oh, say I'm running a website that does whatever. What if I'm not running a website? What if I actually have a bunch of data, I want to do some computation over it, I want to maybe convert files to a different format, or maybe I want to search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and I just want to fire up a bunch of machines and do it. Go for it. It doesn't have to be a web thing. It doesn't have to be a web UI thing. It doesn't have to be HTML. Mm-hmm. You know, it can just be something that I want to run in the cloud. And we just want to address that. How do we make that really simple? How do we keep the developer in control of what's happening with their service running in the cloud, and help people just achieve this scale, you know, just on their own demand, you know, what they want to do.
Excellent. One of the things I was thinking about is when talking to Manavir, he mentioned some of the, you know, sort of brain salad surgery done by David Cutler and Hypervisor, hacking through Hypervisor and whatnot. Yeah. So there's a lot of virtualization going on here for obvious reasons, right? So you have one hard asset on there, you could have any number of virtual machines running through Hypervisors. So, you know, one of the questions I would ask in general is, as demand grows, for, let's say I start my cool website and demand goes out of control. Like, let's say I start a Twitter in the cloud using this service. Yeah? We get lucky and someone actually uses our technology to create one of these freaking things.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then scale can become an issue. You may have multiple virtual machines, but you only really have one physical network connection from that box. Is there an issue with scale in general? Is that something that you guys have already figured out?
So just on network, like bandwidth scaling sort of thing. So as we sort of scale you out, you actually get, this is a mental model that's a little bit broken, but it'll help for this purpose.
Yeah.
Just imagine, forget virtualization, forget a fabric machines. Let's just say we have a server, right?
Okay.
We have a network tap that comes into it.
Yes.
To scale up, we add another server, we add another network tap.
Yeah.
We add another server, we add another network tap. Those are all load balance at sort of the top level where, of course, in our data center, we've got a giant pipe coming in, right?
Sure.
So actually, as you scale your sort of compute resources, your bandwidth capabilities are actually scaling too. It's not that you're limited to this one Ethernet tap on the back of the box. It's actually, first of all, it's a big pipe to start with, and then you get more and more pipes, and so we sort of scale it out that way. So. So it sort of comes for free with the horizontal scaling. Like, that's kind of what you get out of doing this horizontal scaling is actually that some of that physical stuff like networks and whatever scale out too.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, and of course, that was a lead into the other obvious question would be the notion of scale. I mean, do you guys foresee, like, a Microsoft.com type of scale or an MSN.com type of scale running
in
your service?
Absolutely.
You do?
Yeah, we're, internally, you know, our goal is that we could run anything that we run in Microsoft, and Microsoft runs some of the biggest services in the world.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the intention, and the goal is that this is going to be the platform that we as a company want to use to lower our costs, to make, you know, our management easier and simpler and whatever, just inside for our own stuff. So, I mean, those examples may not even be hypothetical, could it work for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Those may actually be reality of how we run these things. Someday we got to grow. We got to grow. You know, our data centers and everything to get to kind of where we'd move those things over. But it's definitely the way we've designed from the very start. The design point has been around being able to achieve that massive scale.
Excellent. So, you know, in conclusion, I mean, this is a CTP, which means it's going to get better. I mean, you're still working on it. What kind of stuff do you want developers to really kind of nail? Like, what do you want them to get out of the CTP? What's your because you mentioned there's really no good programming model. I mean, program model is the same, right?
Yeah. I want you know what I want people to do with the CTP? You know, I want people to pick it up. I want people to understand, just understand the investment we're making in developers in this. Because I think it's easy to miss and see this as, oh, this is a business kind of thing, or it's a data center kind of thing, or whatever. But it's actually, it's a developer thing. There's a lot about this that is really about helping developers to code in this model. And I've mentioned that a lot of the technology is the same, but some things about the way you write applications mm-hmm. is a little bit different. Like this notion of this horizontal scale means that your state all has to be centralized. Like the shopping cart example is the one I always use. I'm running some online retail. I've got 10 front-end nodes. Mm-hmm. I get load balanced to node number 3. I click add to cart. I'm buying a new bicycle. I go... I come back to the page, I go through the load balancer again, I land on node number 7, and I go, okay, check out, but wait, where's my bicycle, right? The mm-hmm. shopping cart info was over here or something. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a typical problem that you run in today doing web farm sort of things with ASP.NET and whatever. And it's generally solved by, okay, we're going to put everything in a SQL box, right? That's like sort of, we'll offload it, we'll put it in a central place. At which point, that might become your bottleneck, and then you have to worry about how to scale that. We took that away. We put in Windows Azure Storage, we have this scalable system. And of course, if you want to, you can use the Azure SQL services if you actually need SQL-like things. And they've also figured out how to do that massive scale for you, right? Mm-hmm. But your programming model has to change a little bit. Like, you can't actually keep state on these boxes. You got to use these things and whatever. So there's a little bit that's new conceptually. So the things that I do, the way I write code and whatever, it all feels pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Some things about how I think about writing my application, we've worked really hard to make it feel like the natural way to build things and just make it, you know, just bake it into all of the tools and all of the stuff. And what I want developers to do is get their hands dirty with the CTP, feel what that's like, think of what, you know, where does that surprise them, or where does that change what they had to do? That's where we'd love to get a bunch of feedback so that we can improve over time. I'd like to know what do developers get surprised by here, or what do they think is like, oh, it'd be really nice if it just worked this way, and it doesn't seem to do that or something. So that's what I want. I want developers to go really get their hands dirty, find out what surprised them, tell us about it, and write a bunch of stuff, and hopefully write some stuff that people can reuse and write, you know, the email example we gave, like, what if you were the service in Windows Azure that everyone used for email? You know, wouldn't that be cool? Like, that's what I want people to go write reusable components, reusable services, and kind of help us to build this ecosystem, because it's Microsoft. We're all about the ecosystem. This is what we love to do. So that's what I'd ask developers to do with this CTP. And those people who actually have gotten tokens. Mostly that's just going to be PDC attendees who have gotten the tokens now and are able to go deploy stuff. Go deploy it and blog about it, check it out, let people use it, and let's see how it goes, and give us feedback all the way about anything we can do to make it better.
Right on. Well, I love that idea that you mentioned. In fact, you're the first one to actually mention that, the notion of being able to write a reusable service that everybody in the mesh can use,
yeah.
or in the fabric can use.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
And it would be a way for people to make money as well, right? There's a monetary incentive there. Right?
We're absolutely figuring out how do we help people get rich in this thing too, right? How do we help you to kind of... that helps us, right? You know, like we'd love for us, our platform to be the one that helps you guys get rich, right?
Yeah.
So it's absolutely, it's a money-making opportunity too. And I'd love to see there be a bunch of these. And so when I come to write a service, I don't have to start from scratch. A bunch of people have written different pieces that I might want to reuse, and those are all there in the cloud already.
Now, do you remember that old technology called UDDI?
UDDI.
I think that's what it was called. It was like the universal... Karsten Janikowski. He's going to kill me for saying his name like that.
Poor Karsten.
I'm sorry, okay. Karsten, my man. Was a PM on that team, and that was sort of the universal way of finding what you're looking for, and you didn't know where it was, right?
I see.
That was sort of a concept that Microsoft kind of pioneered.
Yep.
In the early web services days. And so what I was just thinking when you were saying that, it would be really nice if there would be some way for me to subscribe to the cloud, mm-hmm. in the sense that I might want to know that the service exists,
yeah.
instead
find
of rewriting it.
Right, so. Exactly. Like, how do I find these things?
Yeah.
And how do I find out how I use them? And someday, how do I find out what they cost, or how I pay for them, and can that all be worked out? These are all things we're really interested in figuring out. How do we make these all discoverable? How do we help you promote your service? Because again, we're after there being a big ecosystem and kind of centralized around our platform. So just the selfish Microsoft view, right? Mm-hmm. We want there to be an ecosystem. That's great for everybody else because it means that we're going to be doing everything we can to enable that, to help you promote your stuff, to help other people get at it. So definitely, you know, watch this space over the next year or so to see some plans about making a marketplace and making these things discoverable, maybe making them even technologically more compatible so that it's kind of just easy to just drag, drop a service into Visual Studio and start using it, even if it was written by somebody else who I've never met, and whatever. So so definitely, I like the way you're thinking, and, and I like that Karsten was there, too.
UDDI, man. No, that was a good, that was a really interesting idea. Yeah. It really was. Because in the web services days, one of the questions you have as a developer is, well, wait a minute, how do I find out what web services are available?
Right.
So
right.
there has to be some sort of, you know, let's reawaken that idea.
Yep.
The other thing that's
important. And how do I find out which ones are good? Which ones do other people
yes.
use?
What are they rating?
Which one exactly? Like there's you know there's just there's a huge opportunity I think to just to help this ecosystem get going by giving sort of a place where people can all contribute and a way for people to talk about these things and rate them and
totally
you know, and just and show what they've used and there's I go to websites all the time and I'm like kind of like. How was this built or whatever? Is there something that they were using that I could maybe reuse or whatever? It would be great if we gave people who wanted to an opportunity to sort of share that information about what they did and how they built it. I don't know. There's just there's a lot that could be done here. It's sort of it's a little bit wide open.
Sure.
We're giving some hard thought to a lot of different ideas. Yeah, like I said, just keep stay tuned for some of this stuff.
Right on. And I just want one last thing. Windows, the actual operating system that runs on hardware, it has always been more open than people have given it credit for in the sense that it is an open platform in the sense Windows is nothing without the applications that are written on it, that are written for it.
Absolutely.
So developers have always been first and foremost for Microsoft, even though we might have convoluted the APIs or made it kind of hard to understand with poor documentation. It's not like we didn't try to do
it
that.
It wasn't on purpose, right?
So the point is, this is taking that same philosophy, extending it to the cloud, because, for example, Facebook could run on Windows Azure, because Windows Azure doesn't require that the executing context is managed code.
Right, right.
Like Microsoft.
Like that's right. At the CTP, I mentioned earlier, managed code, and it's a CTP thing only.
Yes.
That just happens to be today sort of the first thing we go at. It's the one we understand the best.
Yes,
it's sort of the
course.
Most controllable for us. You know, we said at the PDC, 2009, we'll be doing native code. And we're absolutely...
nice.
You know, there's a reason we're called Windows Azure, right?
Yeah.
And it is the same thing as Windows. We are sort of nothing without the apps that get built on top of this. It's our goal to just be as open as we can be on this. And so where we can, we've used REST protocols everywhere. It's all just XML and it's HTTP. Atom Pub, you know, we've used the ADO.NET data services stuff, which is just Atom Pub over data, right?
Nice.
Which means any language, I've got some Python code that I use against our storage stuff. We've played with PHP. We've done a little investigation on Ruby on Rails on how does that run in here. We're going to all those places. We're going to do what we can to just... I'd say we're going to ensure that it's possible to do these things with all these things. So where possible, we're going to work with the communities who own these technologies and things to just sort of encourage development to work on top of all this stuff. Where we have to, we'll get our, you know, we'll roll up our sleeves and write some code ourselves and get this stuff going. Because for us, the point is, you know, we want to be the service that's enabling all this. We want to be the cloud that everyone wants to use. What technology people are using to write their code, what tools they're using, what their app does, that's the glory of having an open platform is they'll figure it out. Developers will find the sweet spots, they'll find the right tools to use, they'll find the killer apps.
Yeah.
Our goal is to be as open as possible so that people can find those things.
Absolutely. And when we think about cloud-to-cloud communication, right, because Google has a cloud, Yahoo has a cloud, or Amazon definitely has a cloud. The inner cloud communication is as simple as the developer realizing how to communicate, because it's just data that's passing between clouds.
Yep.
So that's not like a sort of a, you're not going to have the interoperability nightmare that we've had with, you know, Windows to, or, you know, native to Java, managed to Java, that whole sort of thing that we had during the day. That doesn't exist because it's just data.
Yeah, yeah, certainly on right the data, like it's we've built on top sort of XML on REST on HTTP and whatever, which means that it's interoperable with nearly everything already, right? and it just sort of happened. Even the apps that are running, I mean, you have to think even further, right? I've built something, I'm running in Windows Azure. I just want to reuse this little piece. Somebody else wrote a cool service that I want to use. We've been talking about these sort of you know, reusable building blocks, right? Mm-hmm. And they happen to run it in Amazon, right? It's just HTTP. It's just, you know, again, as long as that developer hasn't chosen to do something really proprietary or some kind of thing, you know, which wouldn't be in their best interest to do, right? As long as they've said, yeah, I'm just HTTP also, and I just use REST and whatever, you just call it, right? It's no, I mean, it's sort of the beauty of the web, sort of invented, you know, reinvented in the cloud, in that these things are all interoperable just by the fact they use all these simple protocols. So as long as people just keep it simple, and that's our message to everyone, just simplicity everywhere. Mm-hmm. Just keep the protocols real simple. Don't invent a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. Reuse these basic things that make the web go already. Mm-hmm. As long as everyone's doing that, and we're doing it in, like, our storage service, for example, and we are, right?
Yeah.
It's all going to work together. People are going to take these kind of distinct clouds that are all there and pull them all together, get them closer together, get them to interoperate, and then developers have choice again, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. It's been a while since they've had a lot of varying choices in kind of cloud technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And we want that. We want interoperability. We want openness for sure in the internet.
Cool. Now, I just wanted to point out, for people who have been following Channel 9 for a while, I mean, this definitely, it smells of Ray Ozzie. Because, I mean, his whole thing...
He has a distinct odor.
He has a distinct odor. And his odor is, he wears the cologne Simplicity.
He wears
and that's
the
definitely what
cologne.
He fights for. So I want to, you know, give some props out to Ray, because I know he's thinking, it's like, that's as a chief software architect, you know, he's not in the media, he's not all over the place, but this is definitely, you know, his work in the sense of... Let's change our mindset, simplify everything, simple protocols, and of course the community has asked us to do this for a while.
I've had the opportunity to present this stuff with Ray a couple times, including at the PDC, right?
Yeah.
And one thing I've been picking out from his sort of message about all this is this notion of just start with developers who are going to write code. What do they need, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then let's simplify, you know, let's use the existing standards, let's never reinvent anything. And let's, you know, this software plus services notion of, well, yeah, we can use the cloud to kind of extend things, and we can still use the power of a desktop PC or a laptop. We don't have to lose that just because we're doing this. We just have to make it all interoperable and extremely simple standards. You know, some other stuff that Ray's been heavily involved in is mesh. And he says, gee, the mesh protocols are like, they're Atom Pub. They're like RSS feeds, basically, of my data. Very similar thing you see in Windows Azure Storage is that we're, again, building on these things that already exist and kind of the just implicit standards of the web. There's no need, unless, you know, if you want to invent some new protocol, you've got to go to his office and tell him why it's needed, you know. The default answer is, no, keep it simple, just use something that already exists. So absolutely, he's just getting started, I think, in this space of kind of making the software plus services vision kind of real. And this is one of the places he's starting, I think, is on this. So he's definitely been giving us strong leadership in that direction, also the direction of openness and interoperability in general, just that, you know, look, the proprietary world isn't really where it's all at. Like, the openness that we've kind of gotten with Windows to some extent is really where we can invigorate the whole industry.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, hey, Steve, always great to talk to you.
Yeah, great talking to you.
And I really, really hope you do some more of your absolutely amazing screencasts.
Hey.
I know they take time.
They're
amazing.
There should be a few of those on the Windows Azure Dev Center already.
Okay.
Featuring me, and we're going to
keep it up.
We'll, I love doing those.
I want to link to it from Channel 9 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to do it twice.
Let's get a link together. Yeah,
definitely.
Sure.
We'll get a link out to your site for sure and your blog.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone knows that your blog is
blog.smarks.com, smarx.com, and it's running on Windows Azure as we speak. All the images, all the data, and whatever, all in Windows Azure Storage, and it's all hosted there, so I never have to worry about it being down.
Outstanding. Well, hey, great to talk to you.
Great, thanks.
Take care, man.